The parable of the sower is one that we've read many times, most people who read the Bible. And so I don't have any objective this morning of saying anything new. I think if I tried to say anything new that you haven't heard before, it'd probably be false teaching. So it's not always a good to try to say new things, but really a lot of times just renewing things that maybe we already know, or perhaps we see some applications in something that we didn't see before. And I may have read this parable back 3 years ago, and I wasn't in the same place in my life 3 years ago that I am right now. And so this parable may mean more to me right now than it did back then. And so it's always good to review these. The person that requested it suggested Luke's account, but graciously said that I could also look at Matthew and Mark's account as well as we look at this. And I kind of like that, to look at all of those. Luke, interestingly, starts like this: and when the great multitude had gathered, they came to him and from every city, and he spoke by a parable. Matthew Mark says that he spoke it by the seaside. So, and Luke, I wouldn't be surprised if Jesus didn't tell this parable on more than one occasion. So maybe Luke's occasion when he wrote it, he heard him preach at a different time or something. Down at the seaside is where you find Mark and Luke recording theirs. I always have a hard time, a challenge to see this new and read it fresh because I've read it so many times. But we kind of all have something in mind when we, about the scene when we read this parable. How did it look? You know, we may think, what kind of boat was he sitting in, and or how far out from the shore was it sitting? Or what did the people look like that were, you know, dressed sitting on the beach and in the nearby? And how many were there? We kind of have ideas, maybe the way we pictured this scene before. It's just kind of hard to imagine what it would be like to have been there that day. Because I've heard this so many times. But I want us to try to do that. You know, I want us to try to imagine if you were there that day. And you got to hear him tell this story. And you're down at the water's edge. You know, you've heard that about Jesus, that he's a pretty impressive teacher, but you've never been there. You've never seen him, never met him. And you know you've heard, though, that he's going to be down at the edge of the sea today, and he's going to do some teaching. And you think, I'll go in here. So you go, and there's a big crowd. And you kind of think, I'm going to get down there close. So you start working your way through the crowd. Instead of sitting on the back pew, you're going to get right down front. You're going to be right, so you're right at the water's edge. And there he is, and he's going to start teaching. And your expectations are kind of high. You expect this person, based on what you've heard about him, he's going to really just get you excited, or really turn things around. You're going to hear something maybe very profound that you just never thought about before, something really wise and deep, and something really marvelous. Remember, you don't know what he's going to tell you that day. And you don't know the interpretation of this thing either. So just try to imagine, if possible, putting yourself at that spot that day. And what he says, he gets up and he says, a sower went out to sow his seed. And that's the first thing he says. And so you think, you glance around and you remember you passed a couple of fields and crops when you were coming, some different plots of land. You think, wow, I wonder what kind of marvelous thing he's going to say about that. And so he says, a sower went out to sow. As he sowed it, some seed fell by the wayside, and it was trampled down, and the birds of the air devoured it. And some fell on the rock, and as soon as it sprang up, it withered away because it lacked moisture. And some fell on the thorns, and the thorns sprang up with it and choked it. But others fell on good ground, sprang up, and yielded a crop 100-fold. And so that's what he says. And then he kind of finishes by saying, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. So that's what he says. God goes out to he throws some seeds on some ground, and the birds came and got it, and that's the end of that. He threw some seed out on some other ground, and it was ground that was kind of rocky, so it plants came up right away, but the sun baked them and they died. He threw some seed out on another part of the ground, and it was kind of thorny, had thorns around on it, weeds, and it grew up, but with all the other stuff growing around it, it was choked. And then some fell on some good ground and produced a bumper crop. He says, you people who hear me, listen. And you're sitting there, and you're kind of sitting on the edge of your seat. What's he going to say now? What are you thinking? I'm going, what's the point? Tell me what this, what's this mean? And am I missing something here? Is that it? And all these people came here to sit and listen to this great, profound teacher, and this is all he has to say? And Matthew even adds to this, it says he left. After he said this, he kind of goes away. The indication is he didn't tell him anything after that. And what would you have felt like that day if you got to be there and heard that? Would you have felt disappointed? Would you have thought, you know, after all of this, you know, I've waited and anticipated this. This is all that I get. So it's over, and the group starts dispersing, and most people go home. And you're about to leave too, but you glance around, you notice that Jesus is walking away, and there's a few people with him, and they're heading off. And you say, well, I think I'll go and just, I don't have anything else going today. I'll go and see what this is all about. I'll go and tag along for a minute. So you follow him along. And you get to a house, and Jesus was with these other people. Some people were his disciples, some weren't. And they start asking him questions. They say, you kind of approach it, and you overhear this group, and these men are saying things like, well, what was your point? What were you talking about? Well, what does this parable mean? And what were you driving at? What are we supposed to get out of this? And you think, hey, I wasn't so crazy after all. And other people didn't know what he was talking about. And so, they ask that question. And Jesus tells them the purpose of the parable, or the parables in general. And at least you get a kind of a shortened version in Luke, a little bit more extended in Matthew, but he said, to you it's been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God, but to the rest it is given in parables, that seeing they may not see, and hearing they may not understand. So that sounds kind of harsh, if you think about it. A little bit harsh. He kind of says, some people come to learn, some people don't. Some people come for a show, other people come to grow. Some people come to criticize, some people come to find fault with what I had to say. There were certainly plenty of people there in that day who were looking for that when they heard Jesus. And other people want to know about God's kingdom. And some people come merely for selfish reasons, to feel good about themselves, to hear something that will intrigue their intellect. And when they don't hear what they want, they just kind of go away. And so Jesus kind of, he's really saying in a sense that these stories act like a filter. They sift out those who are serious about God from those who aren't. And I guess the question for us at this point would be, if you were there that day and you heard him say that, what would you think? I'd say, well, I wouldn't want somebody to say that about me. I wouldn't want somebody to say, well, I was just, in this thing for my own purposes or something. I'd probably want to stick around to know a little bit more. And so hopefully none of us here today would be among those who were sifted out. The majority that probably just went away and didn't stay around. Hopefully we'd be among those few who have ears to hear and to understand. So ask yourself the question, how would you have responded that day if that parable, and that was the first time you heard him, what would you have done? Had that been intriguing enough for you to stick around and ask for more, to follow him, walk away, and ask him later, what was your point? Well, he gives an explanation to those who stayed to find out. And so, here's the explanation of that parable. Verses 11 through 15. He says, the parable is this, the seed is the word of God, those by the wayside are those ones who hear. Then the devil comes and takes away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. But the ones on the rock are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy, and these have no root, who believe for a while, and in time of temptation fall away. Now the ones that fell among the thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to maturity. But the ones that fell on the good ground are those who, having heard the word with a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with patience. And that last phrase is supposed to be deleted. So, the sower goes out to sow the word. That's pretty easy. Say, I've got that. The seed here in this case is supposed to be the word of God, the gospel. And the soil represents different kind of hearts that it falls on. And there's hard dirt. The first one is hard dirt. That's when the word gets preached. But before it ever has a chance to really work, do its work, Satan comes and removes it. And nothing ever happens. Nothing ever comes from it. And the second one is stony ground. Hearts that when they hear the gospel, they're excited, they respond, but they don't have any depth, any shallow, they're kind of shallow, no roots, if you will. So they kind of, they burn up. They fall away quickly. And then the thorny ground, some are like that ground that produces all right, but it produces indiscriminately, produces a lot of stuff. Whatever's sown there, if you sow weeds, they grow. If you sow thorns, they grow. If you sow the gospel, it grows. So in a sense, they're very productive people, but eventually the other things take over. They take precedence, and the gospel, that kind of dies out, or it just gets choked. And then the good ground, they hear the word, these people are honest, they have good hearts, they hold on to it, they give the seed permission to stay and germinate, and they let it change them over time. It grows in their heart. And now, that's how he explains it. The application of the parable. What is the most common application of this parable when we read it? When you've read it in the past, what's the way we usually apply it? I usually do it by thinking about we're the sowers and other people are the soil. Maybe you would think about, you know, this coming weekend we're going to have a gospel meeting and we're going to take some of these pamphlets and we're going to pass them out to our neighbors or our friends, or maybe you're going to go to Sullivan's tonight and eat ice cream and you're going to hand them to somebody sitting at Sullivan's eating ice cream and invite them to the meeting. So you're like the sower and you're going to sow the seed. Or maybe you may see this parable and think about a study that you've had with a friend where they were excited for a while and they were just really eating it up, but then they got discouraged by maybe some hard choices they had to make. Maybe it was really difficult with their family, pressure from their work, people at work, and they just eventually gave up. It didn't stay in their heart, it died. Or maybe you're thinking about maybe when you study with another friend and they seemed interested, but they got tied up with other things. Had a lot of things going in their life, a lot of other things that kind of dominated their time, and it just never did really mature. Maybe you think about that when you think of this parable. Or maybe you think about good hearts. Maybe you're thinking about some people at Tingsboro that you've taken time and you've taught and you've sowed the seed in their life and their hearts, and perhaps you've converted them and they're still here. And you think those are those good hearts, that good soil that took the word and it was they changed and became Christians. I think that's kind of the most common way people think about this parable, common application, where we think of ourselves as the sowers and others as the ones who respond to it, or the soil where we sow the seed. And I think that's a legitimate way to think about this parable. I've made some lessons from this parable when I've taught it. I've tried to encourage people not to be discouraged. Only a small percentage will obey and stay with it when we go out and sow the seed. Jesus probably was trying to teach his disciples because he was about to send them out. And he wanted them to know that, you know, out of that that seed that was sown, there was only one quarter of it that took. The other three quarters didn't take. So maybe he wanted them to be, you know, to realize, have a realistic expectation. And also I've taught not to prejudge which heart is right, which heart isn't. You know, maybe we could say, well, that guy wasted a lot of time out there sowing that seed on those other parts of the soil. You know, it sure was a waste of it, but that's exactly what he did. He just sowed it all over. You sow it everywhere, and then you get different responses to it, and eventually, you know, you find out which one's the good one. And we should just sow indiscriminately. We should just sow the seed every chance we get to everybody we come in contact with, and let the seed come in contact with the soil, and let that determine what's the hard ground, and that what's the stony ground, what's the thorny ground, and what's the good ground. Leave God to bring the increase. Let Him make that decision, and we just get the seed out there and let Him decide that. And the most, you know, and so I think that's a legitimate thing to remember. And again, we read this in our class this morning, Mark chapter 4, that the kingdom of God is like a man who scatters seed on the ground, and he goes to sleep at night, and he gets up the next day, and it's sprouted, it's grown. He doesn't even know how it happens. In other words, this guy was just threw the seed out there and let the seed hit the soil and let that do its work. And he was indiscriminate in the sense of where he threw it, and it wasn't up to him. Power wasn't in him. So that's a reasonable way to look at that parable. That's an application that we can make of that parable. But that still focuses on us as the sowers and the soil as everybody else where we throw it. But I want to suggest to you that every one of us fall into one of these four categories. We are the soil. And just because we're here this morning and we're studying together doesn't mean necessarily that we all fall in that fourth category. So this morning's lesson, the last few minutes of it, I just want to think about which of these categories are you in this morning. Not what where you were 5 years ago or 30 years ago when the seed was first planted, but where are you today? What's happening to you in 2011 as the seed hits the soil? What happened when you read Proverbs in March? When that seed hit the soil, what did it do? Did it bear any fruit? When you read Psalms in January and the seed hit the soil, what did it do? Did it bear some fruit? As I read 1 Corinthians on Sunday morning, get ready to start for this class, I think, I need to read this not just as a teacher about to teach, but I need to ask how this applies to me. And is 1 Corinthians going to have any effect at all on my life? Or am I just going to regurgitate things I think? We're just going to sit around and have a big discussion about it. Are we going to deal with these facts? Or is it going to make any difference in my life? Is anything going to change? You know, how is the seed affecting the soil right now? Is it making any change in us? What category are you in now? Well, it could be different ones. Which category are you in today? Are you the hard ground? Are you the hard ground? First category. That may be the only category here who applies to people who've never obeyed the gospel. It's the only one that could apply to those who have never obeyed the gospel. And maybe there's some here this morning who would fall into that category. And the first thing I thought about as we read this parable here, and we noticed down in verse 5 says, the sower went out to sow the seed, and as he sowed, some fell beside the road and it trampled underfoot. He gave an explanation of that. And down here in verse 12 he says, those who beside the road are those who have heard, and when the devil comes and takes away the word from their heart, so that they may not believe and be saved. So what occurred to me when I read that this time is that Satan doesn't really worry about you at all until you hear the gospel. And it brings you to a point where you need to make a decision. You know, because that's when he has a challenge on his hands. Because, you know, up until that point, you kind of belong to him already. Whether you recognize it or not, you're kind of in his camp. He kind of has you. But when that gospel hits your heart, when that seed is planted, and you've come to a point where you got to make a decision, then he's very, very concerned. And I did a study the other week with some folks a few weeks ago, and they invited me to come to their congregation church visit. Went to that, but I met their pastor, and they were hoping I would teach there. They was hoping that this couple was hoping I would get invited to teach there and get some. But that guy, I think, perceived me like I was kind of a wolf coming in to steal away some of his sheep, and I haven't got a call back on that so far. And that's kind of how the devil, I kind of thinks about these. You know, when you he sees the seed sown, it starts to hits your heart, he sees it as a potential for him losing a customer. Somebody's going to come and steal you away. So he's very concerned. And so, you know, you might ask yourself this morning, when I first heard the gospel, or maybe right now when you're hearing it, are there any signs that Satan might be trying to take away the word from your heart so you won't be saved? So you might ask yourself, have you come up with any excuses right now? Or have you come up with excuses for explanations why you don't need to do anything? And there's just all kind of things you might think about. I just listed a bunch of them here. Somebody may say, well, this is just all exaggerated. It's not that serious. Or, I suppose say, a good God wouldn't punish somebody. He really wouldn't get that angry. Or you might reason, they just want my money. That's the only reason these guys want me to be converted, so they can get my money. Or we're really sophisticated people, and you know, we don't really believe these kind of things in the 21st century. We're kind of beyond these myths and these miracle things. Or maybe you're thinking, you know, there are lots of other religions too. And what makes this one the right one? And that's a legitimate question if that really is an honest question. And if it is, you'll probably search to find out. You want to look into that. Find out what would make this legitimate or not. Or you might say, you know, preachers, they don't really believe their own message. They don't even believe enough. That is true sometimes. I've met some guys who don't believe what they preach. And maybe they don't even practice what they preach. And that'd be true as well. And you might reason in your mind today, you may say, well, I'm better than some members in this church. I know some people, and they're not really all they're, you know, they would appear to be. And that's that old hypocrite argument, you know. I don't need to become a Christian because I'm better than some of these people who are Christians. Or you might take the other end of the spectrum. You may say, I'm just too much a sinner. I've done so many bad things that there's just no way God could do anything. He wouldn't save me. There's just no way. And if you've thought that way, and that sounds, you know, that's kind of how you've reasoned, that's why you haven't made any the decision to become a Christian, my question is, could it be the voice of Satan? Could that be the voice of Satan stealing the seed, taking it from your heart before it has a chance to do some good? Kind of saying to you, in a sense, you know, you can't be any different than what you are. You don't need to change. And this whole thing is kind of questionable anyway. As long as you go to church, that salvation issue is kind of taken care of. It doesn't really require anything of you. Just make sure you make an appearance once in a while. Do you find yourself in that category today, hearing the gospel, but finding the seed being taken out of your heart? That would be one possibility. And for time's sake, I'm going to move on, but you know, we can all get hard hearts, even people who've been baptized. How's your heart today, as opposed to it was whenever you first became a Christian? So I don't have time to follow that line of thought, but that's a good question. Is it hardened today? Or is it still good soil? Another one might be stony ground. You can look there. I'm sure that's real clear. But this ground here, you got a little bit of green, and you've got a lot of burnt grass. It's kind of where it has some soil, but just really thin, and it's all on top of the ground. And once the heat, you know, hits it, just kind of burns it up. My backyard's like that sometimes, I tell you. Probably most of New Hampshire's like that. But I started planting a small garden and decided this time, rather than digging down, I was going to build up on top of the earth. Because you don't go very far down and you hit granite. And I can plant things and it does grow. You know, I found that. But in the spring with the rains and the warm sun, but about the time all that heat hits in the summer, it just cooks it. And it just burns it up. So our faith can be like that, though. You know, it's kind of scary thing is that we will sometimes find ourselves, convince ourselves that we're fine, and we really won't know the difference until the first heat wave hits. You know, we don't really know how deep a faith and commitment we have until we get challenged on some level. It's very hard for us. Maybe it's a conflict at work, with work. Maybe it's a trouble in marriage. Maybe it's trouble with another brother. Maybe you're really close to family, but they're aggravated that you're studying the Bible, and they kind of laugh at you or treat you kind of with contempt, like you're an idiot. And they put so much heat on you and so much pressure on you that you just can't take it. You just can't stay with it, so you fall away. You know, I've been studying with some people in the last few weeks, and they were very excited about the studies that we had. They were just, boy, it was just the first study, you know, the lady just wanted to tell me everything she knew. Just everything she knew, you know, and it sounded so impressive. And so I said, boy, this lady's really been studying. She's really on fire. She's heading the right direction, you know. You know, the first question they had for me, her and this other fellow, was about marriage. And they had a marriage situation where there was a divorce involved. Boy, my heart just went, you know, I said, man, because here's the test. And so I gave him I read him a verse. I said, what does the Bible say? What does the Bible say? So we read the verse, and I said, what does that say to you? What do you think? And that was the last they really wanted to study that after that class. And they got married not too long after that. And they still wanted to study though. And they invited me back, wanted me to come to church with them. Really excited, you know, anxious for me to teach everybody else. I was like, well, maybe there's a good heart somewhere, you know, keep looking. Maybe they're the open door to somebody else. But they had instruments of music in their worship. And I said, you know, later, I said, so what do you think about that? You know, what do you think about that? What does the Bible say about that? And we studied it, and they came to the conclusion, well, you know, it does say that. But that's really complicated. And you know, it's kind of like that, you know. I'm very thrilled when somebody wants to study the Bible. I'm very, very excited. They're really anxious to read, and maybe they've even done some study already. But you know, I've come to recognize that there are a lot of obstacles that people have to overcome to get to Jesus. And each one will test the depth of your faith, the depth of your real heart, your desire to be committed to Him. And it doesn't always happen at the beginning either. Sometimes it's after we become Christians and down the road some. But it usually involves sacrificing something that we want for ourselves. But I don't, you know, I don't. Having said that, I don't ever discourage someone from obeying the gospel. You know, I remember the Philippian jailer. We study about the Ethiopian eunuch, or maybe the 3,000 people on the day of Pentecost, and they heard one sermon and they were excited, and those people responded to the gospel. And as far as we know, you know, a number of those people stayed faithful. So, you know, I don't want to leave the impression that I don't want you to be excited or quick to obey the gospel when you hear. But for some, it's too easy. It's too easy. And so I've come to respect a lot more those people who are a little bit cautious. Those people who don't just jump and run the first time they hear a study. They want to make sure they know what they're doing. They want to count the cost. And so if you have a Bible study with somebody and they're very excited at first, but then their excitement kind of wanes a little bit. Maybe even they even stop the study at first. You know, you may think, oh man, I thought that was a great opportunity. I thought that was the one. Well, maybe it is. Maybe that person's really given some consideration to what you told them. Maybe they're being very cautious to really weigh it out and think, am I ready to make this kind of commitment or not? So that tends to make deep roots when people are cautious and really consider the depth of commitment that we're talking about when it comes to worshiping the Lord, coming to Jesus. But some people are not like that. They're kind of reckless. They jump in without thinking. And Jesus was pretty harsh. You know, Jesus was pretty harsh to some people. The rich young ruler, when you read him, you would say, every one of us probably, when you read the first part of his story, you'd say, that's a good man. Boy, that is the man we want, you know, that God wanted in his kingdom. But Jesus challenged him. He said, go sell everything you have and then come follow me. And then there was another fellow that said, I'm ready to follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said, great. You know, he said, but first let me go bury my dead. Jesus said, you let others bury your dead. You come follow me. And he didn't. And then he told his disciples, get ready to take up your cross and follow me. So Jesus put people off sometime. He recognized that they weren't counting the cost. And they he gave them the test they needed to find out whether they would end up like stony ground. So, you know, where are you in that? Where am I in that? What kind of soil is in my heart today? Is it stony ground? Is it, you know, is it the kind? Is it, am I being put in tests right now that are showing that I'm kind of not as committed as I thought I was. I'm starting to get burnt up under the heat of some type of trial and challenge. God allows those tests to come to find out the depth of our roots. So, if you stay faithful and you have deep roots, it'll probably be because you have a deeper commitment to God and His Word. And so we need to think about that depth of commitment. Well, let me move on. There's another category, and that's the thorny ground. The thorny ground. And this category, I think, could be one of the most challenging categories for us. And a lot of us might be in, and a lot of others too. You think about the thorny ground. Let's read it again. Go down in your verses there to chapter 8 and verse 14. It says, "The seed which fell among the thorns, these are the ones who have heard, and as they go on their way, they are choked with worries about riches and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to maturity." Think about it. It's not the rocky ground. This is pretty good soil. It's ground that produces a lot, but it produces indiscriminately. Whatever falls there tends to grow in this heart. And the weeds that grow up alongside the gospel eventually choke it. And that can be a challenge for us. Weeds, according to Luke, were worries and the riches and the pleasures of this world. And there's so many things that our life can get wrapped up in, right? I mean, what is the seed that fell among the thorny weeds? It's like those who hear God's teaching, but they let the worries and riches and pleasures keep them from growing, so they never produce good fruit. Think about that. They don't die. That's what caught my attention. They don't die, but they never produce good fruit. Their fruit never comes to maturity. We get wrapped up in all kinds of things. Get wrapped up in our job, really consumed with the things that we specialize in, with our profession, and we can just get so either enamored with that or consumed with it that, you know, we just have precious little time for anything else. That just dominates us. We just don't have time to think about spiritual things. Or we can become consumed with social activities. You know, that's a hard thing in our society. Sometimes I've been on the bandwagon of saying, Christians need to be more social. We need to get out and not be so isolationist. We need to mix and mingle with people and do things in the community and be involved in community things so we can meet people and teach them, because that's where we find people. And there is truth to that. But I've seen lives that just get consumed with that. They're so consumed with community activities and community things that's what dominates them, and they never tell anybody about the gospel. They just are all involved in community activities. And having children can be a great challenge. Even that can be dominating from beginning to end. All the things that go into raising kids through school years, all the demands placed on parents. It just gets to be less and less time for spiritual things as we consume ourselves with that. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're weeds and thorns. I'm just saying it can be consuming with things that take us away from spiritual things. And we need to set those priorities now, because our kids will grow up and they'll want to know what to make priorities when they get older. They'll be asking, what did mom and dad prioritize? What things were given up? Was spiritual things set aside because these other things had to take precedence, or were material things set aside so that spiritual things would take precedence? And they'll remember that, and that'll be their default mechanism as they get older. What will be the thing that dominates their lives, and what will not? And like I said, notice that this thorny ground, it doesn't die. The stony ground, it did. It's all still there. It stays there, but it's just unproductive. It's unfruitful. You ever got corn at the supermarket? Or usually it's like when you're at a farm stand and you peel it back and some of the rows are missing in it. You ever done that? Really kind of frustrating, isn't it? Well, what happens is there's so many other things that's growing up around it, and it steals the nutrients. And it robs it of the nutrients so it can't fully develop and fully mature. And I wonder if, that happens to us. We have other things, so many things we allow to compete, because certainly we don't want to get left out in our society of any of the fun things that our society offers us to do. But we get so involved in those things that we're still there every Sunday. But we're so crowded out by other things, we just never become productive, fully developed, mature Christians. So be careful. Where's your heart today? What kind of ground is it? And then lastly, the good ground. The good ground. This is the good soil. Verse 15. The seed and the good soil, these are the ones who have heard the word in an honest and good heart, hold it fast, and bear fruit with perseverance. Luke's the only one that adds that last phrase, with perseverance. That's kind of a challenging and scary thing too. Part of the definition of being a Christian is bearing fruit. Bearing fruit. It's not exclusively converting other people, but certainly that's a part of it. There's the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians chapter 5, where we mature and develop our faith, become truly God's people through and through. And Luke adds with perseverance, patiently produces fruit over time. It doesn't happen overnight, but people grow up and they go through these trials and tests and test their commitment, and they dig deeper and they hold on to the Lord, and they determine to do His will in the midst of trials and tests, and that forges that character, and they become more mature as time goes on. But we are definitely supposed to be productive. It's fruit bearing that God is looking for in our lives. And moving forward in our faith, not being stagnant. We're not just hanging around. Not to be let ourselves be surrounded by or overtaken by cares of the world, but to get rid of those things. So, conclusion, do we fit in any of those categories today? Where's your heart today? You know, as I extend the invitation, you know, where is your heart? What kind of soil do you have in your heart today? Not 15 years ago, 20 years ago, not 2 years ago when you're baptized, but what kind of soil do you have in your heart today? When you read your Bible, look for ways that it can change you. Do you only see it reaffirming how good you think you are? Does it? Do you find the where it's going to challenge you to dig deeper and make changes? And again, if you're thinking about becoming a Christian, there's one thing for sure today, that you have Satan's full attention. I go back to that first category just one more time. He doesn't want you to respond. And he will use your best motives against you. I don't want to be that rocky soil, somebody says. I don't want to obey too quickly and not have good deep roots and then at the first difficulty fall away. Some people will not respond who need to respond because of that. Or someone will say, I'm afraid I'll fall into category 3, become a Christian and let other things distract me because I have a lot of things going. I may not have the time to devote to it like I want to, so I'll never really produce anything or amount to anything. Well, just remember that, you know. The voice of Satan can be saying that to you, trying to steal the seed from your heart, keep you from being saved. But if you counted the cost today, you're ready to make the commitment. Don't be a part of that multitude that day that walked away, but be the person that follows Jesus, turns their back on the world, and becomes a disciple of His. Do that today. Be baptized if you need to do that. Commit yourself to Him fully if you need to do that. But let us help you by coming forward and making that known as we stand and sing our song.
Who will follow Jesus standing on the right? Holy numbers.